I wanted to go and do a bit of woodwork, but they wouldn't let me anyway. I then moved to Australia, and that was, pathways for women at that stage was a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But it was certainly something that I always was passionate about. I did an accounting degree, and then when I finished that, I started a law degree.
Wow.
Because I thought I would, certainly help women, battered women. That was something I was quite passionate about.
Oh, wow, that's so important.
But you know, you never know quite what direction you're going to go in. And I think for me, it was always, I was this tiny little female. And people always underestimated me, as a female, and B, being tiny at the time. And in a way, I don't know if that was a benefit or not, but you could just kind of fly under the radar. And I even remember at university days, you know, one of the kind of like the deans was like, oh, I had not expected that from you, or something. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, be careful because we're coming.
Yes.
So
a dark night, you know.
Yeah, I'm not a big platform kind of person, but we never didn't think we couldn't do it. We knew we were always in a male-dominated environment, especially with sport. But we persevered, and to a degree, it's part of later on. It's definitely not in the beginning, but later on, part of the sustainability response from organizing committees or host countries, you know, they wanted to see a female presence, and the fact that we were 100% female was a benefit to our bid.
Totally.
You know, obviously we could do the work hopefully with our eyes shut, but you know, and we do it very well, and we have very high standards.
I think that a lot of people, you know, give the short end of a stick to having women, you know, be, I guess, prioritized to be in the room, but it makes such a difference. Like when you see a room like that as no, like in some ways, like, you know, there's a saying, you know, they only choose the best of the business, but truly the best of the business is often, you know, who's like the best friend or like the best beer buddy or drinking buddy or something, you know, like it's a really interesting dynamic, you know, to feel as though just because, you know, they desired to have a woman presence in there, it doesn't mean that the work itself is any less than any other company, but it makes such a difference. And it actually is probably the reason why they pushed for it, is having women in the room. You can tell that there is a simple sense of security and knowing that there is, I think, a diverse of opinions and a diverse of, I guess, opportunities for where an event can go, you know, because it does have a lot of, I guess, backlash when people are saying, like, there needs to be a woman in the room. It's like, it should just be a normal thing. Like, it shouldn't be something that you need to push for either, right?
And funny enough, there's quite a few articles for Canada. One, for the city of Vancouver, you know, the lead is female. The second 2IC is female. The head of BC Place, female. We're an all-female company.
Wow. I actually didn't know that about the other ones.
Yes.
Wow.
So I'll share some of those articles with you where they've actually just notified that it was women that actually in those lead roles were actually delivering. And like you said, I think as a host city, Vancouver, number one, you know, from whether it's from you know, Sports Illustrated or
and
TSA,
it was literally
like
ranked. Yeah,
ranked.
It was ranked.
We ranked number one, and it is a collaboration. But the amount of women in the room was substantial out of all those different groups. And
that's so inspiring to hear. I think that that's also a really big part, is that a lot of the times that this isn't, you know, publicized as much. Like, I didn't know all of these different women in these amazing roles, and that makes sense, because a lot of women also, they don't try to get all the fancy or the fanfare. They just sit down and they just do the work, and then afterwards they're all like, there was a common denominator in the success of this project, right?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's more than that, in the sense that, you know, somewhere like Dubai, where women's rights obviously so to see that for World Expo, and I've said people, well, you know, do you really want to work on these things? Yes, you do, because you have to be in the room. And actually the head of Expo, Her Excellency, was female.
Wow, that's incredible.
There were so why things do still also stay in place, but again, you know, it was 50% or more with of that big organizing committee were female.
Wow.
And the other place that that I really saw it was actually in Azerbaijan.
Wow.
And it was also very female heavy. Mm-hmm. The women running that an organization.
Wow.
Who we were actually delivering to. Mm-hmm. all female. And I remember at one point there were some demands where we're like, oh, this is just not even possible. I just moved to Canada. I was flying in and out. Mm-hmm. We got brought in to not just deliver the city look, which we were doing, but just to help with some other things as well. And I think the president wanted everything moved up, and we're thinking, oh, this is not even possible. We've got like 13 weeks or whatever it was.
If there's a will, there's a way.
They put in this, everybody in that room, whether it was the you know, person providing the trucking, transport, dressing, mm-hmm. and signage, overlay, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
it was all female.
Wow.
And the only male in the room was the head of the company we were helping. Mm-hmm. He's her assistant, and I remember, this is not possible. Like, there's no way on earth this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of those women said, "Yep, yes, we'll do it, and we'll be done."
Wow.
And they did.
Wow, that's incredible.
And they
incredible.
Did. And part of our remuneration at that time was that we successfully managed to get this delivered in mm-hmm. this short period of time. So we took that on as well, plus delivering the city look, which we were doing.
Wow.
And we did it.
But I remember,
I was like, this is in the middle of Azerbaijan, and I remember thinking, where am I, and what has just happened? I mean, that was one of the most memorable moments in my life, sitting in that room, probably maybe double the size of this. It was just mm-hmm. a table, and suddenly this request had mm-hmm. come, and they did not blink an eye,
mm-hmm.
and they said yes, and I'm thinking, no way, like, this is not possible. And it was done, and it was done very successfully. And
that's so nice to look back on, too, right?
Yeah, I didn't know much about Azerbaijan at the
time. I went to high school, an international school, and I had some friends from Azerbaijan, and they were women as well, and they were always top of the class, and they were also the kind of, like, silent, but, like, deadly, like, you know they didn't really talk much in class, but then when it came to the test or the oral exams and they would present, it was just so eloquent and just done so perfectly. And I think that that's the number one thing that a lot of women get overlooked upon, is that you know, maybe, like you said, you can be quiet, you can be in the back, but at the end of the day, the results are what show the value, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it is, you know, for us, it comes also from my mom. My dad's amazing too. He's actually mm-hmm. volunteering right now at 84 at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow.
Wow.
Yeah.
volunteering.
He's flown over from Australia to volunteer.
Oh, that's incredible.
But my mum still works at 84.
Wow.
Full time. She works harder than I do.
Wow.
But she was always a great example. Always through life. I mean, we never questioned it. We were three girls.
Mm-hmm.
We were never questioned what we could or couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always a bit of a plus.
Inspiring.
I think, you know, I've always had female mentors or bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that support of women for other women,
totally.
Right from the get-go. I think it's a beautiful, wonderful thing, and you know, keep it going.
Yeah,
in my mind,
I think that's especially why we have this segment, and like this to begin with, Intravenous is really looking to uplift the voices of women that maybe are working behind the scenes but actually contributing so much to not just their community but to the corporate world as well in general. Like, how have you felt, you know, being a 100% owned woman business and working within this, like, bigger corporate international sports world as a company?
You know, and I think this is what it is we just never questioned that we couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we were prepared to work hard, you know, whether mm-hmm. it be physical hours and mental hours and everything else. But we did know we wanted to do it in a way that we could also have family. Like, we didn't want that mm-hmm. part of our feminine side to again, I just assumed I would have children.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just something I don't know if it was the way we were brought up, but so it was something I never questioned whether I would or wouldn't. And my third child was born. She came early, so right in the middle of our very first event at World Youth Day.
Wow.
And so I just pushed her around in the pram, you know, seeing all the pilgrims and the fans and the people that were there while I pushed around in the pram. And my husband, who was working as well, was like, well, you better come and meet me at lunch. This is where I am to take the baby for a bit. And that's what we did. So, it never stopped us moving around the world, having kids, and I think...
And taking as many bids as, you know, you can in some ways. Like, I think the bids that you've taken so far, or, like, the different, I guess, festivals that you've done or been involved in have been around the world. Like, really, really, like, very different places. How has that worked for you as a woman, like, walking into each of these spaces, you know, having to deal with, like you said, the cultural nuances, but also just the international nuances of being a woman in these spaces too?
Yeah, you know, and more so for Corin, who's my other partner. You know, she's lived in Qatar, with Azerbaijan, some of the more difficult countries, and you know, I think you always have to respect what the culture is, and even actually dressing and signage.
Yeah,
dressing is a very big that part when you're taking that on from a design perspective. Mm-hmm. You have to understand the culture. What do, what colors mean in this culture?
Oh,
what,
so true.
You know what? You, what are we
symbols,
doing?
You
what
know?
A color, even a symbol. That, yeah. Like, you know, you have to be very cognizant of what is important to the space that you're in and the people, and mainly the people.
And empathetic, right, too, to like the fact that, you know, you may not have, you know, the right idea at the start and be able to pivot, you know, towards whatever the space needs, right? Like the people
and for us, it's everything, because it's sensory rooms, you know, like, okay, these spaces, how are we getting these people to these spaces? What's it, you know, what's important? So I've definitely found, you know, in the events, even probably before World Expo, but you had to start to shift and understand. You know, we did Invictus here as well, and you know, that was a major, like, kind of learning curve.
Major.
Yeah, and I mean, that I loved 100%. It was a more of a passion kind of project for us, but just to understand how other people. You know, it doesn't matter, male, female, you know, whatever challenges people have, and some it's you can visibly see it, and some you can't, and so it's kind of respecting all those and learning about it and understanding and I think that to me is always a joy as well. Every time you go somewhere new, you're just learning new things and people are meeting different people. But
it's a dopamine job, I'm sure, you know, just like constantly firing all the energies, you know, from the different experiences that you've had.
I'm definitely in the right job now. I mean, for me, accounting was a bit you know, straight and narrow. So I think right from those beginning days, and then maybe that's why I started a law degree, whatever. But I just kind of knew I wanted to be more people based. Number one, but also two, I don't know what my attention span's like. So for me, I love it because you finish a project, even like now. Why it is sad mainly because there's going to be people you're not going to see anymore, and the intensity of it is over.
Totally.
But then. You know, a little break, but then it'll be something new, and they're always different challenges, different highs, different lows. So for me, it's completely ideal. There's a creative element, but you know, I'm also running huge budgets, so I've still got my numbers, which I like.
And next, we are going to have our very last bit of the conversation with Zarina. I just want to remind you all that Democracy Now! Is next. So let's see if we can get into our very last bit of their conversation. And we are going to listen to just one last track here while we get into their conversation. Okay, and I am back. Just having a little technical difficulties with the last bit of the conversation. I hope you have been enjoying it, though. I love how Zarina was able to connect with Morag, just by being out and about in the community. And I love that for her. And now we are going to just see if we can get a little nice track up here while we get into our last conversation. Oh, one last thing I just wanted to also remind everyone is that if you are listening to CJSF on a regular, especially during the 10 to 11 o'clock hour, tomorrow is Speak Up. And your host, Jesse, will be here with some incredible stories as well as music. And let us see if we can get into a track at the moment while we get to queue up the last bit of their conversation.
Une story time shit. T'as dit j'ai pas fait un chat. J'ai juste un post sur ton timeline. Doom scrolling, 4 in the morning. Thirst traps, tic tac, got me horny. Are you rush, put me collar over truck. C'est correct si tu veux pas. But you're a real guy. Ring ring, pick up the phone. Ring ring, what's up, hello. Ring ring, pick up the phone. Ring ring, mon numéro.
Do you like this? Like these grams. You used to be a fan, but you just told me. Now you hate dope games. Damn, t'es toujours sur ton sel. Pourquoi tu réponds pas à mes appels? It's okay, I guess we don't date no more. Sur le kick, sur le snare, we can dance all night. We make a good bet, we can dance all night. Hope you know that I care. Sur le coup d'un éclair.
Loved for you to explain a little bit about that, because I'm sure that people are, I mean, you think branding, wayfinding, how many like materials that you need for this,
and you're using like, you know, we're one of the functional areas that probably uses the most,
yeah,
you know, in terms of those materials and you know what's being used, and that has definitely improved so dramatically over the 20 years. And World Expo, one of their main themes was sustainability, so it was very much at the forefront.
I was going to say, how has it changed in terms of, you know, the parameters of what you're expected to do as a company from 2007 till 2027, basically, like in sustainability wise or in inclusivity wise, like has there been changes in expectations?
Oh, yeah, definitely, and you know, really positive ones. Mm-hmm. You know, we build on that ourselves every time we collaborate. We're always willing to learn, you know, and even at the bid stage, you've mm-hmm. really we found that sustainability is a good third mm-hmm. of that bid. You've got to show how you're sustainable, and it's not just about products, it's about where are those products. What's the original source of those products? Mm. Is it ethical? What, you know, what labor is being used? Mm. What, right from that? So it covers the people side of it,
mm-hmm.
But it also you know, and you know, is it First Nations companies that you're kind of working, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, you're trying to bring that in. And then you've got, you know, shipping, like transport. Like, what is the sustainable aspect for it? So, for us here, for our current or last project, you know, we're all Vancouver based companies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing!
Yes, in Vancouver Sign Group, amazing.
Wow!
And
shout out Vancouver Sign Group.
So, yeah, big shout out. I mean, again, just you know. Like, we started off like, you're not allowed to say no to us. So, like, whatever we want to do, you're just going to go yes. And they did. And they're a phenomenal company anyway. But also, too, they operate sustainability. Their sustainability from being based in Vancouver was already a step ahead on that front. And then the recycling, upcycling, reuse, we're just in that phase now.
Wow.
It's so exciting to see, especially with FIFA Fan Festival as well, like the reuse. So Pride, this festival, that pedal. So all of those kind of more structured things. Some stuff has to go to waste, but you know, the amount of recycling, upcycling, it's fabulous, and I'm so excited. I'll bring one around when they're done. But the upcycling of all the city banners, all the fence scrims into bags, little soccer soccer shirts to go to
jerseys.
Not jerseys, but you know how the little teams play, and you have your team color. Yep,
yeah.
All of those.
Like a bib, I think it's
the
called.
Bibs. Thank you.
The bibs. Yeah.
And so yeah, so all of that is
so
happening.
Funny. That's amazing.
And that's
and I saw they actually did a little one with the nets.
Yes, into the
into
hammocks.
Hammocks. Yeah.
I was like, well, I know where I'm going. Pizza on a Friday night and
a
hammock and Grass Mountain or wherever. You know, so there's those things that and Vancouver or Canada is you know, our streets ahead. So we
of
had
course.
It with Invictus, and we have it for the World Cup. So that is lucky, and they're only looking for more, and even, you know, the FIFA Fan Fest, the recycling, you all had recyclable cups.
Yeah.
You know, that was a huge part of that project that they delivered. We just did the branding of it, but to see them collaborate like that, likewise in Toronto as well, but Vancouver, it's great to see. And Vancouver, we're now at the stage of, okay, well, which community centers need A-frames or boards whatever the case may be. So there's that kind of level of coordination, but also the actual recycling, upcycling. And it's also, what products do you use in the first place?
Mm-hmm,
so
totally.
There's been a lot of movement on that, on the base products.
Yeah, and that's something Tria does as well, is that stuff, or do you, like, end up, another group kind of takes over?
No, so, like, for dressing and signage, it's always part of, but especially something like this, which is an end-to-end delivery with Vancouver Sign Group, you know, so we're very cognizant of, okay, well, hang on, there's this product and there's this product, you know, you have to make sure that it's fit for purpose, but also what is the sustainability of that material. And so that is seen right from the beginning. We now provide full reports along with the host cities on the actual sustainability, what was...
And the takedown now, I'm sure, is now when everything is happening.
The takedown, yes. And you have to, you know, normally, sometimes I'm sure we've just been collected and back in the bad days, I would say. But now, yes, it all has to be separated. You've got to be very cognizant on what you're putting. I keep using that word today.
Totally.
But how are you separating it? What's going where? It's got to all be pre-planned.
Yeah.
You've got to know in advance, and so that you actually...
Yeah, maybe Recycle BC gets involved at some point. I'm not sure. I was a part of some waste audits recently, and even just separating waste in your own household is so, like, difficult in some ways, to know the nuances behind, you know, what is needed and what isn't needed for these recycle projects and stuff. But it's so cool to see what can be done with waste that is properly sorted, properly allocated. Like, it can get repurposed into so many different materials and different, like, really usable things that we wouldn't even think about. So,
oh yeah, there's going to be some fun things coming out. I will show you when it all comes out. But moving to Canada was like, oh my gosh, okay, I need different dust bins. Like, so even just, you know, on a a day-to-day level, we're constantly learning, and then that also follows through for work too. Mm-hmm. But I do like Canada for that.
Me too.
And you also new to Canada.
Yeah, I'm from Indonesia, from Bali, which is an island that doesn't have the opportunity to even get the trash out of the island a lot of the time. So
and the seas and the water, like there exactly, is yeah. There's so much to do.
It's nice to know Vancouver is, you know, one step ahead, and also companies like yours are thinking about the full picture and not just, you know, the current moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I do think these larger kind of event organizations, which you know aren't always it's not always the most ideal, but the fact that that has been such a focus, mm-hmm. on bids, and you know, which means you need to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row, and that you're learning too, and we all learn from each other, and that's what's been great with Canada. Is, you know, everyone is sharing information, mm-hmm. wanting to be the best at totally. All these things, including sustainability. So it didn't matter if it was the fan fest or the host cities or the
intersectionality of it all, right?
Like, yeah.
Especially when it comes to things as, you know, like having in some ways your position be something that is already establishing this equity, you know, like, you know that these certain groups should be considered, like you should be getting a Vancouver-based company to do signage and not outsourcing it to some cheaper or whatever, less, if I guess.
And even transport.
Yeah.
Like, you think it's coming from a truck at Richmond to the FIFA Fan. It's not coming from a ship in China.
Yeah, exactly.
Necessarily.
It
and
saves
so
much of it, too, for jobs, and also allowing people in Vancouver, you know, the people that are part of the company, you know, they feel like they're being part of the big operation as well, like the festival
100%.
Itself, right?
So yeah.
It's awesome. I think a lot of the feminist issues that we talk about, especially in the world, and sustainability are kind of hand in hand, you know. It's just about making sure that, you know, people that are in the room are asking the right questions and getting the job done, and that often doesn't happen, you know, if you don't have other perspective or other people that are open to the spaces too.
Yeah, and making it important.
Yeah.
I think women are particularly good at that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think so too. Speaking of just women in general, like I got to meet your daughter today, which was incredible. Nice to see, I think, as well, that there's a futurity there, I think, in what you do. She's just so knowledgeable and going to be at SFU as well someday. And like most women, hopefully, that are listening to this too, I think your story is super inspiring to know that, you know, you can go out on your own and, you know, be with your girlfriends and, you know, believe in yourselves and, you know, find that kind of path towards creating something that maybe nobody else has thought about in the way that only you can, right? So I'm curious if you have any words of wisdom or any advice for like young women that are just starting off in whatever career that they choose and kind of getting a little bit of an imposter syndrome maybe when going into spaces that may be predominantly or historically male dominated, and how does it feel, I think, you know, to share, I think, the knowledge that you have for these women too.
Oh, look, and that imposter syndrome, it is very real. I mean, I've probably many times throughout my life, and it was funny in that one of the first jobs I got, like, I got a phone call, and I had decided I'd go into recruitment, and, you know, because I quite like the idea of working with people. And I remember ringing someone up at the first stage going, I don't know what it is you do, but I think I'd like to do it. And they offered me a job. I didn't take it because my accounting firm said, no, try working without studying. So I thought, okay, I'll do that. Makes sense. But anyway, I got a phone call from Rhonda, and she said, oh, I heard you want to go to London. And I'm like, yes, thinking, and I thought, no one's sort of pre-prepped me. I was like, yes, I want to go live in London. I was living in Australia at the time.
Okay.
So she said, okay, come meet me afterwards. And she was setting up a legal recruitment firm in London.
How old were you at this point?
Oh, I was probably 24.
Oh, I'm 24 right now.
There you go, see? Someone's going to knock on that door. Anyway, so I met her. And by the end of that conversation, the person that was going to go set up the company for her in London, which was a legal recruitment company, had decided she couldn't do it. And she, you know, she was going the next week to set it up. Anyway, so...